طفلة تمتطي قوس قزح.
Good morning everyone and welcome to This Week in Palestine.
While Sharif remains on hiatus this week, we will share most of a recording we captured at a remarkable event at Harvard University last Friday. You will notice that as Mohammed Omer speaks, he is showing slides. I think you can imagine what's in those slides for yourself, but if you want to view them, they are posted on Mohammed's website, rafatoday.org.
My name is Mohammed Omer. A Palestinian journalist based in the Gaza Strip. Gaza Strip, where 1.5 million Palestinians are living. I'm living in the southern part of Gaza, Rafah refugee camp, where I also, to make it more specific, I used to live in a Block O area between the Egyptian and the Gaza border. I will start talk about house demolition policy, Israel's policy to destroy houses in the Gaza Strip, and I will not go far, but I will start by my own experience with our house, which have been demolished by the Israeli occupation forces. As I was coming back from the university, after nearly few, like 6 to 7 hours waiting at the Abu Holi checkpoint, I got closer to the house and then a gentleman is stopping me from the neighborhood. I say, Mohammed, where are you going? I said, I'm going home. I walked some few meters and then other person is asking me, Mohammed, where are you going? I said, I'm going home. And then he said, you don't know? I say, what? I have no clue. So he said to me, well, nothing. A third person, Mohammed, where are you going? I said, home. When I got home, I found the house of two floors is not existing anymore. Completely destroyed. Nothing left behind. And I can hear some rumors in the background. Some people are saying, oh, his mother is in the hospital. Someone on the other side is saying his sister is killed. Other one who says that his father is injured. So different stories that makes me really confused and I have no idea. Everything is destroyed. The house that I left in the morning is completely destroyed. There is nothing left behind. The only thing I have is my school bag and my ID, which I need at the checkpoint. The rest of the house is completely have turned into ruins under the Israeli bulldozers. I gather later on the story that my mother, she is injured and she is in the hospital because she had to jump out of the window of the kitchen when the Israeli occupation forces destroyed the house. She had to jump out of the window of the kitchen because Israel have the policy when they attack the houses to come to attack the house from the gate of the house. This is one example of destruction here. This is a Palestinian family, how they receive Israeli bulldozers coming to destroy their house. Can you communicate to this bulldozer drivers? Can you tell him, oh, we're going to take the sofa out? No way. You cannot communicate with them. You cannot deal with them. You cannot talk to them. You just crash the house and destroy. And continue that. Unfortunately, no one can even communicate to any soldier or tell him, well, we are going to get out of the house. This is a Palestinian mother and her son trying to resist and to stop the bulldozer, but they don't stop. I had the idea in 2005 and 2006 and 2007 that sometimes I feel, that's my personal feeling, that those the drivers of the D9 bulldozers are competing each other who to demolish as much as possible. And by the way, they never use the streets. This, they never use the streets. I remember my grandmother in 2004, there was an attack, and she said to me, well, actually it wasn't the plan that the Israeli soldier, he will destroy our house. But he found that he doesn't want to use the street, so he made his own street from our house. I wish for her eyes could be like mirrors to show the Israeli bulldozers demolishing her house. She has nothing to do with politics, nothing to do with army, just a mother. And this moment when I take this photo, she's watching her house being demolished. A big house with orange and olive trees. And she's watching that. And just after I took this photo, she had lost her son and some of her grandchildren while Israel is destroying her house. One example of demolishing the houses in the Rafah refugee camp. This was just a couple of minutes after the Israeli bulldozers and F-16s and tanks have withdrawn from the area. I went to this area, all of us journalists rushed to the area to see what's the result of this attack. And then those children, they were before us, journalists, and before medical workers. And we are always surprised how those children, they just managed to go in before anyone else. I asked the first one, what makes you risk your life? Because this is really dangerous. He said, I'm coming to see if the bicycle is still there. The second one is coming to see if his house is still standing. The third one is coming to see if his school bag is still there. Each one of them has a different excuse to go and see his house. Why Israel is demolishing the houses in the Gaza Strip, and specifically in the Rafah refugee camp? This is the wall that Israel is building. This is Egypt. And this is a Palestinian house where this child, where this girl is standing. I happened to visit this house a couple of weeks later on, and I figure out that this house is not existing anymore. Nowadays, Israel's policy, and I'm talking about until last week and the week before, Israel's policy in demolishing houses have completely changed. There is no presence for Israel in the Gaza Strip. They cannot get inside with tanks. Well, of course they can when they want to. But at these situations, you, in the middle of the night, something like 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning sometimes, you get a phone call from a private number, someone with a broken Arabic language saying to you, this is the army, evacuate your house, we are going to bomb it. If you're lucky, you will manage to escape. If you want to wake up your husband and the children, you might miss it, like this family. They miss this chance, and then everything is lost, and the children are under, because the mother forgot her daughter's sleeping, and then they bump the house over them. See what happened to the neighbor house. This is a neighbor house. See what happened to the neighbor, and this happened 3 o'clock in the morning, when the children and the women and everybody is sleeping. And this is just F-16 missile that hit the house to target as much as possible. One example of homeless families. Salama family. This is one example. They had lost their house and there is nothing left behind. And now they are waiting for the United Nations to rebuild the house for them. Unfortunately, there is no cement coming into the Gaza Strip to build the house. Abdullah, he was asleep when I had to wake him up. And I said to him, Abdullah, what is your dream? Yesterday he had a house, today he had no house. And I said, what's your dream? He said to me, well, to drink a glass of mango juice. Targeting of civilians. Children in the Gaza Strip are protesting everywhere. Protect us. Please stop the siege. Stop killing us. Unfortunately, there is no one to react to this. Targeting civilians, I'm not going to go far. I will talk about my own experience and my brother Hussam, who has been killed by the Israeli occupation forces in 18th of October 2003. Hussam was going to his way to school. Just to make it short, he was killed by 7 M16 bullets. One in the head, in the neck, in the chest, and the rest of his body. He has nothing to do with army, nothing to do with politics. Someone who's 17 years old, going to his school, and what is worse than that, after he died, unfortunately, one of our neighbors, she tried to drag him from his feet into the hospital, because there were two ambulances who were trying to get him into hospital. The Israeli soldiers were shooting at the wheels of the ambulances on one side, and the other side they were putting sand barriers in order for the ambulance not to overcome this. She tried to drag him from his feet just to catch him. She just about to move like that, and then a bullet in the head killed. She was killed. Her name is Widad Al-Ajrami. She's 34 years old. She's a mother of 2 children. Her husband could not watch his wife, and then he came like in horror and tried to carry her to the hospital. He was also injured and paralyzed today. A fourth person, who is his brother, tried to evacuate his son and his brother, and he's just approaching him, and then he was also injured and paralyzed today. Asma and Aboud, the 2 children, one who's 3 and one who's 5. Aboud is trying to wake up his mother, screaming, but she's dead. Asma is next to her father's body, and then he's crying. And she's trying to wake up her father. He doesn't answer. Abud, he was injured while he was next to his mother. Unfortunately, it went like that on for many hours. And until later, we were called to come and collect the body of my brother from the refrigerators of Abu Yusuf al-Najjar Hospital. This is another example. That's my aunt. She had lost two of her children, Ahmed, who was 12, Asma, who was 14. Ahmed and Asma, they were killed in 2004 in an attack that Israel called it, see the names that Israel is using. Rainbow, they call the attack. Targeting civilians, they call it Rainbow. Last year they had, in 2006, there's an attack, they call it Summer Rains. Then they call a new one Iron Colors, or Iron Orange Iron. One of the attacks, it was aimed to target civilians from a short distance like that. And then they call this Picking Roses. Asma and Ahmed were killed. Asma, she went upstairs in order to collect the clothes from the house. Unfortunately, she could not make it. Ahmed, he was feeding his pigeons. But unfortunately, he died. The bullets were coming from here. And in the part of answers and questions, you can ask me about the nationality of those soldiers who were taking part of this. The pigeons are still alive. Ahmed and Abud were killed, and these are all the spent bullets on the kids. These are just, you can see all these spent bullets on two children. This is Abud Abulful. He's 12 years old from Rafah refugee camp. I asked him to tell me what the story, what happened. He's half paralyzed. He cannot move his right arm. And then I asked him what happened. And then he said to me, well, I went out during the Israeli attack. And then one of the soldiers smiled. I felt safe. I smiled back. And then I went closer to him. And then when I approached him, he shot me in my arm. Targeting civilians every day and everywhere. There is no surprise you find arms and legs and fingers scattered in the streets. This is one example. This is one example in the Rafah refugee camp. Sorry, that's in Khan Yunis when we were in the hospital. And then we were like journalists, all of us like this. And then suddenly ambulances are coming with hundreds of cases like those men. Each man of them or women is screaming and beating on themselves, and they want to take their eyes out of themselves, and they try to beat themselves and scream and yell and many weird things like crazy. They're going like crazy. Each one they have like, you need four doctors to control them. And the doctors, there is not much enough doctors to control each one because there are hundreds. I ask the doctor, what's happening? The doctor said, well, we have no clue. That's the first time. We don't know what's happening. And then 2 weeks later on, we learned that Israel is using something called white tear gas, which is internationally prohibited. Those children were playing football. The two kids were playing football in between the border of Gaza and Egypt. And I happened to see the children. They were killed. Just their mothers received a phone call from the hospital saying, come and collect the body of your child. He's dead. Targeting civilians, that was in one of the last attacks. I don't mean to show some photos like that, but this is the reality. That is something that happened. You see doctors communicating with each other on the walkie-talkie, say, oh, that's a conversation that I'm referring to in Jabalia. Say, oh, we have 24 legs and 15 feet. Do you have the rest of them? How are they going to collect whose feet and whose legs? Imagine a Palestinian mother when she gets the news of someone who's killed. I happened to see one mother who had lost her child, and she said, I want to see him because I want to say goodbye to him. And then there is no body. The body is burned. It was burned, all of it, completely. They have only small piece of his shoes that they got during the funeral. I asked this mother, what happened? She said to me, we're preparing supper. And then an F-16 hit the house. And there I am in the hospital. Her name is Hadil Rabin, 6 years old, living in the northern part of the Gaza Strip. Hadil was doing her homework when she was killed by the Israeli missiles. Not only her, but the rest of her family also were injured. As a journalist, I took the phone and talked to the spokesman of the Israeli occupation forces at Erez Crossing, and I said, can you tell me the reason for killing this family? He said to me, terrorists are launching rockets, and therefore we have to respond back. I said, why don't you launch rockets at the terrorists back? Then he said, no comment. One other example. We were passing by those guys. They were smoking, and they were drinking tea. One of them said to me, and I believe this guy, he said, it must be very difficult for you as a journalist. Come tell us stories. And I said, we don't have time to tell the stories now. We have to work, because it's attack now, and we have to be working in the field. So he said, okay. He said, come some other time. Then we just drove. 10 minutes later, we got a phone call, breaking news. The Israeli F-16 hit a house next to the United Nations clinic. We had to run to this place, and then we found those who offered us to drink tea with them. They're all killed. Why are we sending the children in Gaza to schools? United Nations schools, we send them to learn and to study, not to be killed inside their classrooms. Those are the children, two children. I arrived to this and I saw the kids, just the kids, like they were like crazy. They don't know what they're going to answer. They just say, we want to run away from this place because we don't understand what's happening. And then they just say, blood and some flesh in the classroom. Two of the kids, they were inside the Arabic classroom at Al Umariyah School, United Nations School, in Rafah refugee camp, the southern part of the Gaza Strip. And then the children, they don't want to come back. I tried to follow with Leah Tzemel, the Israeli lawyer. I tried to follow the story of what happened to those soldiers. The soldiers were released after 2 days. Israeli warships are used in the Gaza Strip on a daily basis to terrorize the people in the Gaza Strip. This is the Mediterranean beach, where it can be one of the best destinations for tourists, but unfortunately not in Gaza, because in Gaza, these warships are making hell for the life of the Palestinians. And this is one example. I'm sure all of you are familiar with the story of Huda Ghalia. Huda Ghalia, this is her family. This is 1 year, 9 months, 2 years. And the rest of the family were killed while they were enjoying their time on the beach. There is no comment from the Israeli army. Targeted assassinations. If you happen to be behind this car, then you are in a big mess. You don't know when and where this bomb. It's just expected at any minute. This target, they were saying that they want to target Jamal Abu Samhadana, who is the head of the resistance committee. Unfortunately, it was by mistake. 7 times they tried to assassinate him until the last moment, and each time they say, by mistake. Targeting of civilians in the Gaza Strip. Rafah border is other story. This is Gaza, this is Egypt. It used to be exactly like here, houses like here, but there is nothing left behind. And when Israel is destroying the houses, most of the times they don't leave the rebels, they dig holes and they put the rebels inside. Rafah border. In November 2005, there was an agreement between the Palestinian Authority, Egypt, and Israel. And over this agreement, there was Condoleezza Rice, the State Secretary of the United States, and the agreement was to keep the Rafah border for 1.5 million Palestinians open, with cameras for the Israelis, and with observers from the European Union, those guys. Those observers, their job is to observe and to see what is happening and to make sure that the Rafah border is open. I called this guy, Italian, and I said to him, why don't you come? Because I see in the European Union today on the website that the Rafah border is open. He said, well, Israel doesn't allow us to come. Getting out of the Gaza Strip is an impossible thing. I remember my last visit to the United States in 2006. In November, I tried to get into the Gaza Strip. 3 weeks it took me to get back to the Gaza Strip. Maybe I was lucky that I have enough contacts in the State Department and here and there to put pressure. But others, they don't have contacts and they cannot get in and out. And even, you know, climbing is not possible because you need to go for at least 7 gates. I remember this guy, and here is Egypt is taking part in this speech. This guy, the man, is waiting at the crossing of Rafah. After I finished my last speaking tour in the U.S., I saw those guys, most of them, they are scratching their skin. And some of them are bleeding when they scratch. And I said, well, what's that? And then I figure out that some of them had no shower for 8 and 9 weeks of waiting at the border. They are not allowed to go back. For my case, I am only back 10 minutes away from the house, and I cannot get back to my house. International solidarity movement. Internationals who came to the Gaza Strip before 2003. This is Laura from America, and Nicole from Italy, and this guy is from Ireland, and Tom from London. They came to the Gaza Strip to protect the civilians and to make sure that they protect the houses of civilians. Unfortunately, the mission has failed. Rachel Corey was among those who were killed in the Gaza Strip, and I was the first photographer to take the photos of Rachel Corey in the scene. This is one example. Jenny is from Britain. She had a microphone, and she's saying, we are the international solidarity movement watching the Israeli war crimes. Stop war crimes, stop terrorizing the people. We want you to do this. Unfortunately, they could not at all stop that, because the Israeli bulldozer, he just take her with the rubble under her feet and just throw her like this and throw her away. This is a photo of the beautiful face of America. Rachel Corey, he was killed by the Israeli occupation forces. She was crushed by a bulldozer, if we want to make it more accurate. And that's the example here. The US citizen Rachel Corey, and also James Miller, British cameraman, and Tom Herondale, who were also killed by the Israeli occupation forces. The children of Gaza, they had Rachel Corey as a witness for war crimes, where George W. Bush and Tony Blair and Ariel Sharon, they were convicted for war crimes. The children, they were very sad for the death of Rachel Corey, because they knew that Israel targeted the internationals who were witness for courts. They made this symbol funeral in the Gaza Strip. Disengagement from the Gaza Strip. That is an example here. I saw something which was really funny during the 2005 disengagement from the Gaza Strip. I remember this CNN, they were coming with a breaking news saying that Gazans are looting the Jewish settlements. And I was really confused. I called the guy in the desk and I said to him, well, what the hell are you talking about here? I mean, it's garbage. What Palestinians are looting? Look at that. What is that? I said, what is this? So where is the American public? Why people don't protest against this bullshit that you put as a breaking news? And he said, well, that's the breaking news. That's the office in Jerusalem. And she's married to Israeli and blah, blah, blah. Many Palestinians thought, well, that this is freedom. Gaza has the freedom. But not, there is no freedom. Some they call it victory. Some they call it we had our freedom. Unfortunately, this is not victory. This is not a freedom. Yesterday, before 2005, Israeli occupation forces, they would not dare to use the sonic boots against the Gazans. They can't use that. They would not dare to close the crossing. Why? Because there are Jewish and Israeli children inside who are inside this place, and they don't want to disturb the Israeli citizens and the Israeli children. Of course, there is a child in Gaza who is Israeli, and he deserves every day to be taken out to the beach, to restaurants, to enjoy their lives. And they will not use the cynic boobs or the F-16s to bomb, because they know in Gaza Strip there are Israeli children who are also asleep. So it was actually good for us that they were there, because it was good atmosphere, even though we were under suppression. But at some point, there was no all this collective punishment in the Gaza Strip. Palestinians are squeezing their bodies into the Gaza Strip. This is in 2005, right after the disengagement. Everyone is in lines. Those people, most of them, they were born and they knew that they have relatives at the border, between the border. Because when Israel put the border here, after the Camp David agreement, they put this border and then they sealed it completely, cutting off the people here and there, and then those people became Egyptians, and then we are Palestinians, and then we cannot communicate with each other. So most of them, they tried to squeeze themselves in order to ask for their relatives on the other sides. New generations are born, they don't know each other, but that was the moment when everybody was happy. Egyptians, they were Palestinians, but now you see they are Egyptians living in Sinai, and they are trying to get back into the Gaza Strip and into the Gaza Strip. One of the things that people were trying to get is, I tried to find what people are getting from Egypt. Cheese, meat, fish, and all the things that they were deprived from getting. They just get all these things and come back to the Gaza Strip. This is the moment when the resistant fighters in the Gaza Strip have decided to bomb the wall between the Gaza Strip and Egypt. At that point, they say, we are going to bomb the wall to let the Palestinians in and out. It was very good time for everybody in the Gaza Strip. Every person went inside Egypt, and I remember the story of a guy who is, I think, is 13 years old, our neighbor, and then he said, he's coming with his school bag, and he said, oh, I'm bye-bye. I said, where are you going? And he said, I'm going to Egypt now. I'm going to drink a bottle of Coca-Cola alone. And then I said, okay. And then I said, there at least you don't see F-16s, you don't see the disgusting Israelis. So leave them behind, and I don't want to come back. So he was trying to just to escape from this point. One other one I saw that I asked him, what are you bringing? And then he said, oh, some garlic to my mother. Humanitarian crisis in the Gaza Strip. Gaza is living under very, very severe humanitarian situations. In the Gaza Strip, I met with the Minister of Health, Dr. Bassem Naim. I asked him, Mr. Minister, what is the problem facing Gaza? What's facing you since you were elected? You were elected in 2006. Tell me, what's the trouble? He said to me, well, the trouble of the last minute, a boy who's 10 years old coming with his mother, asking for me for one dose of medicine, and I know that this dose of medicine will make him recover. Unfortunately, I cannot rescue his life because I don't have this dose of medicine. Maintenance for the equipment is not impossible. You cannot get in, you cannot get out, materials are not getting in, medical supplies are not getting in, and even medical engineers to fix these machines, they are not allowed in the Gaza Strip. This is one example of water. You have to go at the end of the borders in order to get water. And most of the time you don't get the water, because in order to have water, you have to have electricity. And if you don't have water, you don't have electricity. And if you have water, you don't have electricity. So both of them are connecting with each other, that you don't understand what is happening. Cooking gas in the Gaza Strip is a disaster. Actually, it was a dream one day for the Gazans. The one who is considered to have a cooking gas cylinder in the house is considered to be the king. They say, well, he's a king, those who have this, because you can't have it. There was no wood. I remember one of the stories in Gaza of a mother, and she had her daughter, and she wanted to have a shower. She's collecting old shoes, and she's setting fire with old shoes and with sandals in order to make fire and to have a shower. And it's until today the situation of cooking gas in the Gaza Strip. Gaza is producing millions of carnation flowers. These carnation flowers are supposed to be in lovers' hands, but they are in the camels' mouths, as you see. Not only camels, but also cows. and sheep, because those people, they are the farmers. They were supposed to send these to the outside of the Gaza Strip, but they are not allowed anymore. So they are not allowed anymore to export strawberries, because Israel said, we are not going to allow the Palestinians to get their things out of the Gaza Strip. And this is for the third year. I went to this guy, he's a farmer. His business cost him $2 million. And then I asked him, what the hell are you doing? You know, you're just offering this to the cows, and the cows seems not to mind eating carnation flowers. So he said to me, well, the thing that I'm now in a big trouble, actually, because Israel does not want to export this. And who in Gaza would like flowers? They cannot afford food. So, well, let the animals eat them. And he said, the trouble is not here, that I'm now in a trouble between Hamas and workers and the suppliers. Hamas, on the one hand, said to me, well, you have to pay the wages of the suppliers and the workers, or you will be in jail. He said, $2 million. Where am I going to get it from? I'm not going to get anything. He sold his house, he sold everything, and he cannot cover the needs of that. Bridges in the Gaza Strip are being destroyed. When Israel first attacked the Gaza Strip, the first thing that Israel targets, electricity, water supplies, telephone lines. That's from the first 10 minutes. That's automatic. If there is an Israeli attack, then the first three things, they are disconnected. For us as a journalist to go from the south to the north is not a possible motion. This is, you can, if you want to go from the south, the bridges are destroyed and you cannot go anywhere because Israel targeted the bridges and the electricity. Bread in the Gaza Strip is also another dream. Hundreds, if not thousands of people. Can you imagine going to a bakery and waiting for other 400 or 500 people to do that? I saw some of the families, they slept in the bakery's doors. I saw some families sleeping there waiting for the bread to come. And this guy is saying, well, I can give you only one shekel, and that's 8 pitas, and I cannot give you more. Why? Because he says, well, I have to give everybody because we don't have enough. And one shekel, 8 pitas, it's not enough for one meal. So the families have to wait, and Gaza, Israel did not allow the flour to get into the Gaza Strip, and also with the wheat and the bread. Women struggle in the Gaza Strip. I always get the question that how Gaza is surviving. Of course, there are these days, there is the tunnels between Egypt and the Gaza Strip. They are widely used in the Gaza Strip in order to get in and out food. They are getting food supplies and cigarettes and all the things that the Gaza Strip needs, but there is also restrictions on that, and there is more than 140 Palestinians, mostly people under the age of 30, who died because the tunnel collapsed over their heads. I try to understand once that how some families survive, because 80% on the Gaza Strip, they live on aid from the United Nations. And I try to understand what's happening here. This is a mother, she's collecting some bread, just that she can't find in the streets. And she's collecting grass that you find growing in the street. And then I was really surprised and shocked by what she's eating. And she just cook it with some pepper and lemon, and then she just eat it. It's not healthy food, but she said we have to fill our stomach, otherwise we die. This is in 2000. It was a Thursday, November 2nd, 2006, around noontime. The Israeli occupation forces, they were attacking the northern part of the Gaza Strip, Beit Hanun. Israel said, by louder speakers, every man between the age of 16 and 50, get out of the house right now to one of the schools. You cannot say, I'm a university professor, I cannot go there. No, you can't. You cannot say, I'm also a doctor. No, I'm excluded. Every man who's between this age should get out. And if you are not there, you are in a big trouble. 60 men, for whatever reasons, I have no idea, they have decided not to go. They have decided to go inside a mosque and to seek refuge inside a mosque. Israel immediately announced that the mosque will be bombed in a few minutes. Then the women heard the story. Say, well, we cannot watch the men dying in this. They break into the mosque. They've managed to rescue all the men, but 19 of those women who were injured and the 3 were killed. Internal chaos in the Gaza Strip is going on and is still on. Fighting. There has been fighting all the past few years until 2 years ago when Hamas took control of the Gaza Strip. The internal fighting because of a lot of weapons. This is the weapons that Israel allowed in the Gaza Strip in the first place. Fightings between Hamas and Fatah, targeting ministers' houses, civil servants, embassies, and even members of parliament here. One of the cases, this is a Fatah member. I met with this guy and he was just simply, he was burning 2 cars of members of parliament. And I said to him, what the hell are you doing? What is that? You cannot mess around with those guys. He just shot you immediately. There is no talk. He said to me, well, listen, we just don't want this democracy. America, they don't want Hamas. Okay, so let the Americans bring whoever want. But I haven't received my salary for 9 months. Why should I suffer? Why my kids should suffer? So let's get rid of Hamas and then let the Americans bring the democracy they want as long as it will feed us and our children. The last part of my presentation is about journalist life in the Gaza Strip. It is very difficult to work as a journalist in the Gaza Strip. Most of the time, you are in trouble with everybody. If not with Israel, then with Hamas. If not with Hamas, then with Fatah. Everybody is blaming the journalist. And the journalist is always the weakest person to attack. I remember this attack. This is a bulletproof vehicle. It's for Reuters, a news agency, international news agency. And this is here a bulletproof glass. I remember this very well, that we were inside an attack. It was an attack that Israel called Days of Penitence. That was in Jabalia refugee camp, the northern part of the Gaza Strip. We went there just to see what is happening, and then I happened to see a young man, possibly 18 or 19, and all I see from his body is from here to here. The rest of the body is burned, and he's still alive. And then I can hear him saying, please take me to hospital. I really couldn't understand it. That hits me so much. And I tried to really open the door a little bit. This bulletproof, you cannot open windows. I tried to open it like to understand and just thinking even to open it. And then like this, then M16 bullets are coming like this. At my head. Of course, I was lucky that it's M16. If they were using 250 or 500 or 1000, it will go inside immediately. But at this point, we were lucky. Unfortunately, we could not get him to the hospital, but we saw him some 4-5 hours later in the refrigerator of the hospital, dead. This is another example of Gaza trying to cover attack. Israel destroying the infrastructure and the streets. I thought that Merkava that Israel is using, it will never shoot. That's what my impression. Journalists are experienced with how much tanks and how much capacity they have. I thought that they cannot shoot using the Merkava, it's only for missiles, but I was mistaken. Ayman, my colleague who's working for German news agency, he was like this, and I was next to him. I take photos like that, and Ayman is next to me, and then just one bullet, Ayman in his shoulder. I didn't understand what happened. He just fell, and then we tried to take him to hospital, and then they started even shooting at us while trying to get him to the hospital. At the end, Al Jazeera correspondent, he was there, and also Al Jazeera cameraman, and then we saw that the bullet is coming from here. There are small windows that we don't see by our eyes, but Bassam is working for Reuters. Reuters is the international news agency in Gaza. As you can imagine, a journalist, he have nothing to do with Hamas, with Fatah, or with Israel. For him, he just tells the story, he takes the footage, and then he files to Jerusalem or to London, and then that's it. This is the last moment before he fell on the ground. And he collapsed. And Israel used at that point to use hellfire rockets, and they use some other types of rockets that they, one missile in that corner will spread to hit everybody in the room. It makes more dangerous shrapnels than the bullets themselves, much more dangerous. And it's difficult to get them out of the body, these shrapnels. And most of the time, they have some chemicals and they burn the body inside. Bassam, he was injured, but he survived. This guy, it was last year. This boy is just running from an F-16 missile, 1-ton missile that hit the house. He just barely made it. And the other ones inside the house, they were killed. There has been a lot of protests in the Gaza Strip against the kidnapping of Alan Johnston, the BBC correspondent who was in Gaza. Alan Johnston, he was kidnapped because there was internal fightings between families, and the Palestinians, they used some Palestinian clans, they used some of those journalists, us, to kidnap and to, in order to make like a deal, in order to intervene with the BBC and say, well, make a deal that you release our children, put pressure on Hamas to release our kids from the jails, and then we release him. So we make a deal. So the easiest one to go is the journalists at that case. We were protesting, all of us, that, hey, let's just stop working today because it's every day we lose somebody. If not killed, then tortured. If not tortured, then injured. If not injured, then arrested. So it's all trouble with Hamas, with the Palestinian Authority in Ramallah, not allowing newspapers, shutting down the offices of journalists. At that situation, it became very difficult. And that is the last photo of my presentation. This photo is for Fadl Shana. Fadl Shana, this is his body. His head is cut off. This boy was passing by this hill, and this there was other boy passing by. The car is clearly marked as a press and TV, written in English and in Arabic. They cannot miss that. Well, Fadl, he was filming an Israeli tank, and he filmed the missile which got out from the tank. This missile which killed him, he filmed it. He filmed the missile which is on its way coming to him and hit him in his neck where it was cut like you see here. The ambulances, they have managed to make it. And we said to the ambulances, well, it's too late. Why are you coming now? And then this guy is saying, well, I have no petrol. Israel is not allowing petrol, so what are we going to do now? And I'm running on air empty, because if I take him to the hospital, it might be that I will stop in the middle of the way. So then they start to come up with a new ideas of using donkeys and horses in the Gaza Strip in order to transfer the bodies of those who are injured. By the time you get to the hospital, you will be finished. We will leave part of the questions and answers, but I would like to thank you so much for your time. Thanks a lot.
نفقا لعودة الله.